California State Polytechnic College, San Luis Obispo, presents another in a series of the recollections and impressions of distinguished retired staff members, this time John Paul Reaver. John, how did you hear about Cal Poly the first time?
I heard about Cal Poly twice in 1 week during the spring of 1947. The first time I was listening over a radio program, and a student and his wife won a radio on a quiz contest. The second time, I read an article entitled in the Country Gentleman entitled, How to Take a Cow to College and Make Her Pay Your Way.
Yes, I'm pretty familiar with that article. That was written by Frank J. Taylor, and I was instrumental in bringing Mr. Taylor here and providing him with some material. Now, what was the next step? How did Cal Poly hear about you?
Cal Poly heard about me through a letter of application. Although I was working as assistant manager of the customer relations department at the Cadillac Motor Car Division of General Motors Corporation in Detroit, I'm not a desk man. I enjoy teaching. So I got busy and I wrote a letter out to Cal Poly. First, I asked for a catalog to find out what courses they offered. When I received the catalog, I studied them carefully, and I saw that they needed some more courses in practical writing, technical writing, and so forth. So I wrote out to the Dean of Instruction, Dean Chester O. McCarkle, and asked if there was any possibility of having an opening for a man with my qualifications. Dean McCarkle wrote back and said, yes, we need a man to organize, develop courses that are called English 11, 12, and 13, which are courses for non-degree students. He said, could I come out for an interview? And I wrote back and said, yes, I'd be glad to. I'd always told my family about California, and they didn't believe what I said about it. They do now, though. And we came out, and I got to meet Dean McCorkle. I got to meet Dr. Paul Pendleton, who was then head of the English department, and apparently made a favorable impression, for he asked me to go to USC in Los Angeles to see Hubert Siemens, who was dean of the College of Liberal Arts. Hubert was at that time getting his PhD at USC. So apparently I made a favorable impression, because before I left, I had a job offer from Cal Poly, and while I was being interviewed, my wife was looking around for a house, and even before we got back to California, we bought a house up on Lawrence Drive.
You had a little interesting experience before you went back to Michigan, isn't that right, involving motor vehicles?
Yes. It was not no trouble with the law. In fact, I sometimes wish it had been. But we were visiting some friends, former neighbors in Flint at Big Bear Lake. And one of their tenants there had some Cushman motorbikes. So they put me on a motorbike and showed me how to make the thing go. The thing they forgot to tell me was how to make the darn thing stop. And I kept going through around those roads and missing trees until finally I took off into the wild blue yonder and ran into a big pine tree. And I bummed my leg up so badly that my right ankle, that I had to keep it in ice, a dish of ice all the way back to Michigan.
That was quite an introduction to California. Well, John, then you came out, did you come out a little before school started in the fall?
No, we got here, before Cal Poly started, but we overstayed our time in Kansas, where my wife's folks live, and we had to drive 1,420 miles in 41 hours in order to get here in time to get the children enrolled in the grade school.
Oh, yeah. Now, what was your first major assignment in the English department at Cal Poly?
My first major assignment was to organize and outline and develop the English 11, 12, and 13. English 11 was the usual English composition course for non-degree students. English 12 was letter writing. English 13 was report writing. And those courses I not only designed and developed and outlined, but also taught for a number of years, until about 10 years ago, the college decided to eliminate them and consolidate them into one called English 100, which is being taught at present. So I took the three courses and made them into one 3-hour-a-week course called English 100, Practical English.
And you actually taught those courses then for about 4 or 5 years after you came here?
Yes, I taught those courses every quarter since I have been at Cal Poly. Every quarter I've had a non-degree course.
Now, John, when did you get into the teaching of technical writing, through which you became pretty famous around here?
I got into the teaching of technical writing in 1937, when I first went to General Motors Institute. During 1936 to 37, I was editor of the L.W. Singer Publishing Company, ostensibly the editor. Actually, I was an author, and I wrote 16 books on literature for high school and junior high school for L.W. Singer. And the Stinker copyrighted every page so that I could use none of the material that I had learned over the years. And so when I got back into teaching again at General Motors Institute, I had to go into an entirely new line of work, which I did. And that wasn't so difficult for me, because I graduated from the University of Kentucky in February 1924 with a Bachelor of Science in Chemical Engineering. And I practiced my profession at the Stahl Oil Company in Louisville, and at American Radiator, Standard Sanitary Division in Louisville, Kentucky. So I was accustomed, and in fact, my high school training was in a technical high school, DuPont Manual Training High School. And my 3 years at the University of Kentucky were entirely in science and engineering. So it wasn't so difficult at all for me to get in to this type of teaching. Besides, I enjoyed reading technical and scientific articles. And when I went to General Motors Institute in September 1937, I sat through some of the classes taught by some of the instructors there, the late Bert Brown, head of the English department, and Bob Stanley, head of psychology department. So it was really a natural for me. And I left General Motors Institute to go to Cadillac in February 1946 to take a desk job, be assistant manager of the customer relations department there, where I had to write letters. So I've had experience in writing letters and in developing manuals. I helped write the 1948 Cadillac service manual. I was the guinea pig. When it was written, if I understood it, then the most stupid mechanic would understand it. If I didn't understand it, well, then probably the mechanics wouldn't understand it. So I found it very interesting, but I still didn't like desk work, and I wanted to get back into teaching. And that's why I wrote to Cal Poly.
These experiences over the many jobs that you had and so on, probably developed in you a feeling that that in this matter of writing, there was a lot of time and paper and so on wasted that wasn't necessary and didn't do any good. Is that true?
Yes, that certainly is true. People spend an awful lot of time, waste a lot of time, and time costs money. The average cost of the business letter when I started out in 1937 was 75 cents, or 50 cents, which was estimated by Cy Fraley of the Dartnell Corporation in Chicago. Later, a year or two later, Dr. Arner, Robert Arner of Southwestern Publishing Company, estimated that the cost had gone up to 75 cents. The latest figures that I have are from the Dartmouth Corporation's Office Manager's Handbook, back in 1966, and they estimate that the average cost of a business letter today is $2.44. So you see, when you write a letter that doesn't do the job, that doesn't get the results that you want, you're wasting your time and the company's money, the company that pays your salary. You're wasting the time of the reader. He has to write back and say, I don't understand what you mean. So the first commandment of writing letters that get results are be clear.
Very good, very good. Now, you have a national, probably worldwide reputation as an author of material, books, and so on communications, letter writing, and so on. Now, when did you publish your first book, John, and what was it called?
My first book was How to Write Successful Business Letters in 15 Days, and that came out in 1953. However, a couple of years previous to that, one of my students brought me a batch of about 117 letters in air conditioning that he had received from various companies. And I went through them and analyzed them. And my first article was in the Refrigerating Engineering. I'm very proud of the fact that a mere English teacher has had three articles published in Refrigerating Engineering. The first two were on letter writing, and the second one was on report writing. And then I decided to put this material into a book form. This book, How to Write Successful Business Letters, has been translated into Dutch. And I really got a large charge one day when I picked up El Mustang, and there in big black headlines were the words, Rebel in Dutch. And of course, I immediately began to wonder if the dean was after me or what. But I found out that it was just the fact that my book had been translated into Dutch. It has not been published in Dutch. Evidently, they made too literal a translation, and it lost the flavor. But the book was translated into Spanish and published in Spanish in 1959, and has been very successful. Chapters of the book have been published in Japanese, and the entire book has been published in what would be called a softback or paperback edition in Bombay, India, about 5 or 6 years ago.
Well, that certainly shows that it has gained worldwide acceptance. Now, what were some of the other books, John?
The next book that I did was in collaboration with a friend at in Berkeley, who was then training director for a Hinks store in Berkeley. It's entitled 10 Commandments for Writing Letters That Get Results. This was published in 1949. In 1947, I did for the Economics Press a small booklet entitled How to Write Better Business Letters. This led to the most lucrative and probably best known work that I have done, the Better Letter Bulletins, which are published twice a month by the Economics Press. They have been published now for over 8 years and have been extremely popular. Some of the largest corporations in the United States subscribe to them. IBM, RCA, General Electric, American Telephone Telegraph, DuPont, and a great number of other corporations.
Well, I can see by a pile of manuscript beside us here on the table that your writing days are not over yet, and you're still actively engaged.
Yes, that's true, George. A couple of Sundays ago, I wrote a 100-page book, and which is going to be entitled How to Rebelize Your Writing.
Now, this brings up another point, then, under this title, because I know that you put on many letter-writing clinics for big corporations and associations and so on. Isn't that true?
Yes, that's true. I put on, back in 1955, I put on a series of better letter clinics for Bank of America officers in the Los Angeles area, and then I went up to San Francisco and put on a series of better letter clinics for their officers in the Bay Area. I also put on similar clinics for Pontiac Motor Car Division and for Cadillac in Michigan. I also put on a similar clinic for Gladys McBean secretaries, and then later did carbon copy analysis for their office with their officers' letters. I also have put on three clinics for Frank Pat Patterson of the Patterson Sales Clinic fame. Two of them in Phoenix and one in Tucson. And last May, latter part of May, I put on a clinic for inland bank employees in Pomona. And right now I'm dickering with Pacific Telephone to do some letter training for their people throughout the state of California and in Nevada.
John, where did you get this very catchy title about how to revitalize your writing, or whatever it is here?
Oh, that's good. I'm awfully glad you asked that question. And one day, one of my students came up with a worried look on his face and said, "You know, Mr. Reber, what you're trying to do to us?" And with fear and trepidation, I said, "No, what am I trying to do to you?" He said, "You're trying to revitalize our writing." And I said, "That's exactly what I'm trying to do." And that's why I selected that as the title of the of this latest book, which is a step-by-step analysis of a poor letter, showing all that's wrong with it. I encircle the fault in red ink so that it stands out like a sore thumb. And then at the bottom of the page, I make a comment on what I have encircled and why I did it. Then I have rewritten the letter, and I make a step-by-step analysis of the rewrite to show what how it's been corrected. This is encircled in green, so I use the red for stop and the green for go to show. It's very graphic.
Well, that's real good, and that certainly brings us to something that as drivers we all recognize, the go for green and stop for red. Now, John, I know that over the years you've done a lot of public relations for Cal Poly. You've gone out and spoken to many service clubs and many different organizations. Could you comment a little bit on that?
Yes, I'm no damn good when it comes to committee work. I don't like it. I don't do well at it. So the school was generous enough to let me do what they felt that I could do best, and that was to sell Cal Poly, as well as to sell myself. Everybody ought to do that. Every instructor should sell Cal Poly. What the people outside think of Cal Poly depends in a large measure on what they think of us. I recently saw a letter from a hospital. It was a very nasty letter, and the people received it just after they had returned home from the funeral of their 25-year-old son. Now, everybody who has heard of that letter thinks very poorly, very little, of the public relations of that hospital. So I've made it a practice. I try to sell myself, but at the same time, I always insist that I be introduced as a Cal Poly instructor. Because if people like me, if they like what I say, they're going to like the school, and the school is going to grow. And Cal Poly is one of the finest schools I've ever taught at. So I do. I've gone as far south as San Diego and as far north as San Jose and as far east as Bakersfield and Fresno to put on talks, to give talks with no pay to me whatsoever. Occasionally they will pay my traveling expenses, but I do it as public relations gesture because I like to do it. I'm thoroughly sold on what I'm doing, and I'm thoroughly sold on Cal Poly.
Well, that's real good. And the fact that you have so many repeat calls, and this has gone on for so long, John, is certainly evidence of the fact that they like you, and like you say, through liking you, like Cal Poly. Now, John, retirement is announced here very long ago. Was there any reason other than health that caused you to retire at this time?
Was there any reason other than health? Yes. There are two very good reasons why I decided to get out while I could. One was Meade Johnson in the English department, and the other is his roommate, Gordon Bailey, two very fine instructors. They were available and were here and could take my place and carry on the work that I had started. I'm very proud of the kind of work that I have done here and the position, the prestige that the technical writing courses have received, and I didn't want to let them go and just into anybody's hands. So I decided that while Meade was here and could take over, and Gordon Bailey came and Gordon could take over, that it was time for me to get out. Too many people stay on the job long after they should have retired, when somebody could have taken their place. It's time for us older ones to get out and let some of the new ones come in, bring their new ideas in.
Well, I know it is a lot of satisfaction to know that the work that you carried on and the ideas that you have injected and the tradition that's been built up can be carried on by somebody else. That's certainly true. Now, John, in closing here, you did mention that you were heartily in favor of the philosophy of Cal Poly. Do you want to amplify that a little bit?
Yes, I certainly do. I am heartily in favor of the learn by doing a philosophy at Cal Poly. In fact, my high school education was based on that philosophy. I went to the DuPont Manual Training High School in Louisville, Kentucky. And then I taught for 2 years at Georgia Tech, which had the same philosophy. I taught at General Motors Institute in Flint, Michigan for 8.5 years, and they had the philosophy of learning by doing, or the trained man wins. So this philosophy was not something new to me. My son went to City College in San Francisco and took the hotel and restaurant management program there, and they have the same philosophy of learning by doing. He learned to be a restaurant man by actually managing a restaurant, and he learned to cook by actually cooking. So I think the philosophy of Cal Poly is outstanding, and I hope that nothing will ever come that will change our philosophy. We should not be like other colleges. After all, we are different from other schools. Why should we try to compete with such a fine literary colleges as the University of California or UCLA or USC, or even in the state colleges, Fresno State, San Francisco State, San Jose State, San Diego State? We don't want them to compete with us. We are outstanding in our own particular fields of education, and we should remain that way. And I'm very happy that before Mr. McPhee retired, he got the legislature to agree that Cal Poly is different, that we are not just another state college. We have a definite philosophy, and it has proved successful over the past 30 or 40 years, or even longer.
Well, that's true, John, and I'm very pleased that this point came up and that you put these very fine constructive ideas into this tape today, because I hope that in future years there will be many people, including some of those who feel that Cal Poly should lean towards more academic phases, that can listen to this tape and listen to what you have to say. Well, John, it's been a real pleasure talking to you and bringing your recollections and impressions, and I know that you're going to I have many more active years. You have a beautiful home here. I just admire so much this beautiful antique furniture that you have here, which is one of my hobbies.
Well, thank you very much, George. May I say one thing more?
Sure.
That although I have ostensibly retired from Cal Poly, I'm still on sick leave, but I will retire on the 11th or 12th of January. I am still a Cal Poly man. I'm still available to Cal Poly people. I'm still available for talks as a Cal Poly instructor emeritus. And I'm always ready, willing, and glad to help the students and others at Cal Poly.
Well, that's real good, and I know that that they are going to be very happy to call on you from time to time. Well, we've brought this program to an end, a program in the series As I Remember. This program interview has been conducted by George P. Cooper.